You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, Ricardo Gonçalves with SBS On The Money from the SBS Newsroom for this Thursday, the 5th of November 2020. It's your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap. Ahead, a closer look at bank reporting season and its 2020 report card with the guys at KPMG. But first, let's start with the Australian share market post-US presidential election, although the counting's still going on. The ASX 200 up by 1.3% to 6,139. It follows gains on Wall Street overnight, with the Dow added 1.3%, the technology-based NASDAQ surging 3.9%. Similarly here, tech stocks did well. Afterpay hit a record, up 2.5%. REA Group and Xero also closed at record highs. US-focused stocks like CSL also did well, that company up 3.5%, but it was the banks that led the charge, NAB up by 3.3%. The best performer on the 200 was Chicken Company Ingham's. It increased 16% today. It saw an increase for demand for chickens and it increased its dividend guidance. And for more on the day's moves, especially the fallout from the US presidential election, I spoke earlier with James Whelan from VFS Group. James, you saw the US markets rise overnight, those tech stocks surging, the NASDAQ up almost 4%. How do you explain that in the face of the US election?
The tech stocks are basically unwinding the kicking that they've been receiving for the last few weeks. Without a blue wave in Congress and the presidency, that sort of was going to embolden the Democratic Party to maybe look at taking apart some of those tech stocks. So they put them all back on overnight, which was great. Healthcare also got a really good run too. It's just the unwinding of the blue wave trade.
So based on the way the markets are trading today, what's the outcome that it has positioned for?
Yeah, it looks like the market is okay with a decisive election victory in either direction. It's definitely not the blue wave trade, obviously, but Congress now will have to actually work together. There won't be any mayhem or chaotic modern monetary theory being put into the markets, no Green New Deal, but also no massive infrastructure spend and no $2.2 trillion of stimulus going into the markets either. The worst case scenario for markets is going to be a contested election and any civil unrest. That's the big thing that markets are really looking at. Without that, then it's a continued buying as per usual. The default setting for the market is to go up.
All right, so what are you seeing right now in the way investors are trading? Are we seeing this shift from value to growth?
Value has seemed like a pretty bad idea for a while now, and growth continues to be the way to go. For as long as interest rates are low and money is effectively free, growth will continue to be that way. If interest rates then peak up, you have to revalue some of those lofty tech stocks, some of those growth names, and they'll come down and value actually starts to take a bit more shape.
And what's the further risks to the market at the moment? You mentioned that the contested election is the worst thing possible when it comes to the election. So what's your message to investors?
Our message to investors is to pick and choose which sectors you're going into and not just buy an entire index willy-nilly. So for example, infrastructure going to come off over in the States, but healthcare is going to rally, tech is going to rally, and we'll see the same thing here. Meanwhile, also, we're going to have potentially a much softer position on China, and that puts us at less of a dangerous position having to take sides between, you know, the two warring parents of Australia, of US and China.
And locally, if we can just talk about one corporate story, NAB has seen a 37% fall in full-year cash profit. What do you make of it?
No huge surprise there. Dividend in line, and the basic response from NAB was that, you know, it's a once in a generation, once in a lifetime recession. Potentially, what we could see is a real slimming down and a trimming down of NAB in our banking sector, which would be great. So that way, when the reflation trade does come back on, they'll be a leaner and meaner, a more effective machine without carrying too much fat.
James Whelan there from VFS Group. We'll have more on NAB in a few moments. But one other stock which didn't do well today was Treasury Wine Estates, down 8%. In fact, it was the worst on the 200. It paused its Penfolds demerger. And it comes as Chinese state media acknowledged the existence of a ban on 7 Aussie commodities, and they include wine, coal, cotton, lobster, timber, barley, copper and sugar. Now, exporters are bracing for a potential ban on around $6 billion worth of goods from tomorrow, but Chinese authorities haven't confirmed it. For more, here's Australian grape and wine CEO Tony Battaglione.
It's a $1.2 billion export market for us. and 40% of our exports, so we are vulnerable. I think it's important to say that it doesn't actually matter if the ban oil comes in. The uncertainty that this has raised has meant that people are cancelling shipments now. So importers in China have already said suspend the shipments until this becomes clearer. So we're already seeing a slowdown in trade. So if this happens and continues for a long time, it'll obviously have a large impact.
Tony Battaglione there, no doubt we'll be following that story on Friday and further into next week. Before we go on to the banks, NAB has ended bank reporting season with a full year cash profit of $3.7 billion. That's down by more than a third as it set aside more money to cover potential COVID-related bad debts. It'll pay a final dividend of 30 cents per share. And the team at KPMG has looked at all the four bank profits over the season and say that the combined profit came in at $17.4 billion. That's a decline of 36.6%. The banks are still seen as financially stable and have done some good deeds over the year, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. For more on that, I spoke earlier with Ian Polari. He's the head of banking at KPMG Australia.
I think, obviously we're in pretty uncharted waters from a global economic standpoint. I mean, I think we are in the worst economic downturn we've seen in 100 years, according to the Reserve Bank governor. So I guess in the context of that broader economic backdrop, I describe the results as resilient. I mean, clearly there's a significant fall in earnings. And in part, that fall in earnings is attributed to some one-off notable items, some remediation costs that are ongoing, but also some one-off costs that relate to divestment activity that the banks are all undertaking. The other big driver of the profit fall was also the banks now putting aside a lot more provisions for future credit losses, which is clearly prudent in the context of where we are in the economic cycle and the significant uncertainty that exists.
And speaking of that, is it fair to say the real test will be in this current reporting year when government stimulus measures start to unwind? What are the real risks there?
Yeah, look, it's appropriate to, I think, reflect that these results that the banks have reported, there's been very minimal losses that have occurred due to COVID. And I think there is somewhat of a calm, not necessarily before a storm, but certainly we anticipate to see credit losses occur, and there will be a deterioration inevitably in the lending books of the banks. Clearly there's been a lot of activity undertaken, particularly as it pertains to those customers, both households and businesses, that have opted for deferrals. And the banks are actively engaged in correspondence with those borrowers in the context of getting them off those deferral arrangements. And if there are continued stresses or some form of hardship, then they're quite proactive in ensuring that those customers can be put on plans that allow them to repay those debts. But certainly we expect next year's results to feature the impact of COVID a lot more than what we've seen this year.
I think if there's one thing that COVID-19 has shown or demonstrated, is this consumer's willingness to move to a digital platform. So what does that mean for the banks, especially as more and more smaller fintechs come into the market?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And so I think the banks have responded very proactively. A really good example of that is obviously there's hundreds of thousands of Australian consumers. A lot of them are the elderly who continue to use passbooks. And that was really difficult with branch closures and getting access. And so the ability for the industry to quickly pivot to issuing direct debit cards, I think, is a really good example of that agility and delivering of services to segments of the population. It's interesting too, we've done research that suggests that 32% of Australians that had previously preferred face-to-face channels of interaction with their banks are now going to be using digital channels moving forward. So I think that's really positive. You mentioned the fintechs, and yes, a lot of these are born in a digital world, but I think it is also important to recognise that the banks will look to partner with these fintechs, and we've seen some announcements from the banks where they're looking to collaborate with these fintech partners, as well as obviously compete in certain segments of the market.
And putting everything together, right, what does this ultimately mean for shareholders, especially those reliant on those dividends and capital appreciation?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is, you know, the banks have had a very strong focus on protecting their balance sheets, protecting customers, and obviously looking to preserve returns. And if you look at it from a capital perspective, I mean, the banks have got record levels of capital. They've got double the levels of capital they did when we were entering the GFC in 2007. They've got record levels of liquidity and appropriately, as I mentioned earlier, have increased their provisions for potential future credit losses. So they're at record levels. The thing that clearly comes to some degree at the expense of being able to have sufficient capital to pay back to shareholders. And so while we have seen that diminish in the context of what we've seen in previous years, they've still been able to pay a modest dividend. And look, understandably, when you have profits that have been impacted the way they have, as reported in these results, there is an impact on shareholders. But the banks are, you know, on a global context, are extremely safe, have got very strong balance sheets and enter into, I think, this crisis with a very strong position from a financial perspective.
Ian Pilari there from KPMG Australia, the head of banking. That is SBS On The Money for this Thursday, the 5th of November 2020. I'm Ricardo Gonsalves. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Business Ricardo.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.